We have a very first special episode of Consistently Above Average in a podcast studio with cameras, with videos. We really only needed to get one answer of a question in here. We have a special guest sitting across from us, a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, relatively accomplished in other sports as well. But the main question is, have you any idea what G stands for? No, I'm not. Do you use Spotify as well, by the way?
No.
No. Is there anyone in your house using Spotify?
I don't think so.
You see, in the next couple of days, the end of year stats come out for your Spotify profile. Yes. And I would have reckoned that that particular song would have been top of your top of your list.
It's played a fair bit of things I go to, but it's a nice thing to be in a song, but I'm definitely uneasy every time it's played.
So obviously, for those tuning in who don't know who this person is, this is Kieran McGeaney. He's the current manager of the Armagh senior team. He is one of six people in the history of the GAA to have captained an All-Ireland winning team and then managed an All-Ireland winning team. Am I correct in six?
I think, yeah, I'm number six.
Not a bad number.
No, it's a nice group to be a part of. But the second one, like, you know, I suppose the first one too, like, you're just part of a team.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, it's nice to get like profile, but normally you're taking the most of the bad stuff rather than the good stuff.
We got to know each other through the sport of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's what this whole podcast series has been about. I've been using it as an accountability tool that no matter what, there'd be an episode out every Friday, whether I felt like it or not. Sometimes that means I'm still up at 3 o'clock on Thursday morning recording one reluctantly. But the element of jiu-jitsu that I know people would want to know the most about, what was the first time you can remember ever hearing or even becoming aware of Brazilian jiu-jitsu?
It was probably I'd taken over Kildare, and I was looking for something to do a bit different, like in terms of pre-season and cross training. And again, there was a perception, a wrong perception, I might add too, about Kildare not being like physically aggressive and in the game. Where Dublin would have had that name in Leinster. So I just wanted to do something like that's, you know, would probably even like settle their own minds in that. And sort of looked at doing some sort of cross training in terms of boxing or like martial arts. But so I as most people who aren't that smart do, like, Google just to see what the best martial arts was. And Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu kept coming up. And in Ireland, like, John Kavanagh's name was attached to it. So got a number, rang it, and sort of said, like, any chance of a private? And I think it was his sister that answered the phone. And so he tells me this day to give me sort of like an amount that he thought would put me off. So
yeah, the pummeling drill.
Yeah, so he just said, like, about the cost of it, and I said, no, I'll take six of them. And so I met him, and that was my first introduction to it.
Had you any knowledge of the sport of MMA or anything before that, like cage fighting, or had you heard those things thrown around?
I was always interested, like, you know, in that side of things. I always like boxing and things like that, not because it's people beating each other up, but I suppose it's because it's a sport that, like, is so extreme in terms of the winning and the losing, and how that becomes twined in the person's actually identity. Like, you know, when you lose, you're less of a person than when you win. It's not like sort of other team sports or even individual sports. You know, it's sort of like seen rightly or wrongly as whether you're the better person or not. And so, like, it always had an interest in me in that, like, in terms of mental preparation for it. I suppose it's a bit like defense forces and things like that. Like, it's, there's a wee bit more riding on it than normal.
Can you remember after that first session with John what your impression of it was? Did you think, right, I'm hooked straight away, or I'd like to know more about this? Or could you,
were
you
a little bit on the,
because you'd paid for six, you had to do the other five.
The first session was a pummeling thing, like, so you know, as you know, it's that sort of swimming thing, so it tires you out. Like, and John then like really pushed it home with me, that if I walked backwards in it, then he put me down to do press-ups, which is even harder. But being sort of the person that I am, I didn't want to show that I was tired. But I remember going back to Blanchardstown, like, I was living up in Carpenterstown that time, and going to Starbucks coffee and buying a coffee and just looking at it, because I couldn't actually lift the cup.
From a physiological perspective, can you explain maybe what that difference is? Because you would have been fit in terms of a different sense of athletic, and then you come into jiu-jitsu, because that's the biggest thing that we see with people trying it out who are fit from other sports, and then they kind of blow out their hole.
Most sports are quite different, like in terms of their physiological aspects and like and what's required in that. So we don't use our arms like as much, in Gaelic as you would like in jiu-jitsu. But it's not just that, I guess it's more about the kind of strength endurance as well as the explosive power. But I suppose it was the second and third classes that really did, like when somebody like, half your size is making you tap out, like, and for those that don't know what tap out means, it means that like something's going to break or you're going to go unconscious. It's a fascinating thing to see how leverage and I suppose physics starts to come into to play, like in terms of, a sport. So it did fascinate me. And then as I got into more classes, the whole idea of it's quite like chess. And I know that sort of those similarities, have come out. People who don't know, like, would probably find it hard to see, but like you're always giving up smaller pieces to get larger pieces. And like, it becomes like a strategic thing. And like jiu-jitsu is very much like that.
From a gi specific perspective, how quickly into that training did you wear a gi, or were you just doing no gi training at the start?
No, like I got into the gi quite quickly. I was doing it for a sport, and then like there was a huge curiosity on my behalf. John also told me that like people who start the sport less than 1% at that time would get the black belt. And
it's a challenge then. Yeah.
There was that aspect to it. So, I did become fat. It's like a lot of people too, like, despite his reputation and stuff, like the camaraderie involved in that is quite strong,
yeah,
as well, which another thing I found quite surprising, like in terms of being involved in team sports, and like not everybody in your team always is a close friend, but like obviously like there's huge like interconnections there. But then like within an individual sport, I found the camaraderie very strong between the people on the mats, like in terms of even pre and post roles and stuff like that. There, I found it like a huge community then, like throughout the world, no matter where I went and travelled. If you like, came to a gym and they knew you were doing it, like there was always like I suppose the hand of welcome always put out, like in terms of bringing you in. And
it's insane, and I think you saying that is kind of maybe like allowing me to branch off here just slightly from what I had planned, but there's no other sport in the world like you couldn't go to Ronaldo's football school and learn football off Ronaldo, but you could learn off the best jiu-jitsu people in the world. And I don't want to be negative about it, but as long as you're paying, they're going to welcome you in.
But even with the paying aspect of it, like travel to New York and different things, like, for work and sport, and like going to Marcelo Garcia's gym, for example, was like a huge thing to be able to step into an arena with what's regarded as one of the best ever in the sport, and to be able to participate in that sport with that person, as you sort of say, is like, if you go for a round of golf, like the likes of Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods is not going to come out and go around with you and make you feel good about playing it. And similar like in other sports, but like in jiu-jitsu or Brazilian jiu-jitsu, that happens. And and I remember like rolling with Marcelo Garcia when I was a blue belt, thinking I'm not doing too bad there. And then I seen him like rolling with a purple belt who was after wiping the floor with me, and he wasn't doing too bad either. And then with a black belt, and he wasn't doing too bad either.
Yeah.
And then with a serious world contender, and he wasn't doing too bad either. Like, he was able just to make everybody feel that they were actually, decent.
Getting better.
Where they were nowhere near his level.
There's a very good video of Marcelo, because obviously we've talked before about that guy, Joshua Waitzkin, and the art of learning, and how he was a co-founder in the gym. He helped Marcelo streamline his whole process. Before anyone had online learning systems, Marcelo Garcia had MG in Action, which meant you could watch all of the techniques from the gym, all of the roles from the gym, and it was somebody's job to then go through all of Marcelo's roles and categorize them into, if you want to see him hit X guard sweeps in sparring, you could press this button. If you wanted to see him do that. And it was an insane platform. But there's a video that goes around of Marcelo showing how not to roll with a lower belt, and it's him emptying a blue belt in 15 seconds.
Yeah.
He's saying like, you could do it this way and you'll be a dick essentially and no one will want to train with you, or you can do it this way and both of you will get benefit from it.
Yeah, like, and I think that's one of the things that stands out. Like, and I've been very lucky, like, in all my coaches that I've tackled with during the year, like, Marcelo, John Calvin, Seb Torres, like, it's to have a huge humility about them. And I think it's a great thing to sort of see. I remember going to a class in New York, and Marcelo wouldn't say chastising, but questioning two or three fellas in the class in terms of he was on the tube with them. And he had noticed that like when the tube was full, like that he hadn't got off the seat, they hadn't got off the seat for two or three elderly people. Like, and I suppose in an urban area like New York, like some of that thing can be lost. But he was questioning why they would come to training, to really push themselves for an hour, 2 hours, like twice a day, but couldn't stand for 15 minutes or 10 minutes.
Yeah, to let someone off a seat.
And I just thought it like...
You'd feel like shit if he called you out. You'd be raging.
I know, but again, it was just the way he thought. Like I just said, like, you know, again, like that, like it just felt like it was a good lesson, like in terms of, you know, learning your sport. Like, you know, that's, I suppose, just how you approach things and how you think, like, you know, away from the mats is important, how you think on them.
From a relative, maybe not that it was too much of an issue for you, but from like an anonymity type of thing going into a sport like that after having been such a high profile figure in the GAA, was that helpful for you in any sort of way? Because I know you'd been training with us in Uri for 2 years probably before I knew, do you know, the significance maybe of what you'd achieved. And in particular, the example I'm going to give you there is that you linked up with a guy called Roger Dardis, who we met again recently. And I think Marcelo's gym had flooded or something like that. And he had no idea who you were. He just knew you were an Irish fella called Kieran. And they had mats in some sort of shed or gym or something like that. And he invited you and thought nothing of it. And then you showed up to train or something with him.
Yeah, like at that time, I think it was, what do you call it? I can't remember the name of the storm at the time, but I think it flooded and they were moving, and I was just mad for training when I was over there for those few weeks. And again, despite reputation, the gym bore the pants off me, like, so I like doing or participating in sports. So he had said that there was a few other boys going up there if you, and I just asked him to send me the address, but I think he was surprised that I showed up. Like, but I just, like, you know, you're always like, Rogers now is a serious animal on the mats, like, and but he's also like, you know, he's a typical BJJ man, like, you know, just he reaches out like and offers a helping hand to anybody that really wants to participate. Like,
yeah, like I know he's done a couple of things for like the Defence Forces and the Dublin Fire Brigade and the Guards in Dublin and hosting sessions and stuff like that. But there does seem to be a general theme around a lot of the people that I've crossed paths with in the sport, like.
But I think that, like, the one thing that, you know, in most gyms you sort of see it, like, and especially like in John's gym, like the first thing I noticed was leave your shoes and your ego at the door.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good thing because...
You turned around and left the first time.
It's hard.
Went in a side door.
It's hard because, you know, you're getting well beat. But like, that's just sport. Like, it's, but like everybody is this sort of like, personal sort of, I suppose, I wouldn't say macho is the wrong way to do it, but especially when you're coming from a sport that, like, you know, you've been training it a while and then you're going into a new sport completely. But it was good for me, and it was good again to sort of learn to get into a thing where you're sort of learning from somebody, and like that type of empathy might be the best word to understand, like that you still had to be open to learning new things and how that would sort of maybe sort of transfer across as well.
I remember you told me once before that the level of people that he had obviously in the country at the time was very strong, and the Cathal Pendred or Chris Fields type build of athletes who were chasing after something that no one had done before, that enabled you to be able to, I think you said, ignorantly fight your way to a purple belt. So was that the whole part of it for you, that it was like a button heads sort of thing?
I like the competition, there's no doubt about that. Like, and they're all much younger than I am, like, and, you know, I suppose the fact that, like, I like to compete, and it was something that I could sort of get my teeth stuck into. And, like, there were a good bunch at the time too, like, you know. I really enjoyed John's company and enjoyed his coaching and his feedback, and I was able to talk over different things as well. So there was a lot of things mixed up in it. But the thing about, like, sort of purple belt, like, you know, I learned a lot about the whole idea of sort of letting go to learn, like, and being hard to beat rather than going out to win, and like different things like that, like in defence versus attack. Like, there's a whole lot of different things attached to it. But like, every time you talk about stuff like this, like, you know yourself, Andrew, like, everybody associates it with something that it's not. It's still a sport.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, we're not out in the streets sort of fighting. Like, it's a hugely technical sport, hugely technical. and like a vast amount of skill involved in it. Like, and it's only when you come across like sort of younger people, even like yourself, or people who've started like much younger as well, like the level at which they compete at, versus somebody like myself who only started at 38 or 39.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, I found the whole journey fascinating. I found it hugely enjoyable, and hugely helpful in terms of having somewhere to go that allows me to step outside of another world. Like
navigating, I often say to people, maybe now that I teach a lot more classes or train at a lot more classes, I feel like I'm like a center point to a lot of different people. So maybe people who can only train at 7 a.m, people who can only train in the evening, but I'll be maybe a link between a lot of them. And the thing that always strikes me as fascinating is that, like, in no world would you have surgeons, pilots, people on the dole, you know, general labourers, shelf stackers, scientists, whatever, all incredibly friendly with each other. Like you said, like the camaraderie, like there is, I don't think any other thing in the world that could connect so many people from different backgrounds and peculiar backgrounds and have them bonded in a certain way.
I'd say so, but I think that's because of the nature of the sport too. No matter what you are, like, we all have that internal vice that we all have to deal with, and you know, having a place on the mats and like a sport that allows you, like, gives you a feedback loop, not just like on how you're doing and how you're getting better at the sport, but like how you're dealing with maybe life's problems, like, and sort of pushing it out. Like, it is very hard to articulate to other people. Like, I assume it's very like surfing or something like this.
I think that maybe we're not doing it justice as well, because jiu-jitsu people are listening to this thinking like, oh yeah, that's no bother. But the best example that people give, or I see online, is that if you're going into a jiu-jitsu session with the weight of the world on your shoulders, it's very hard to worry about external things when there's somebody on your back trying to cut oxygen off to your brain or to hyperextend your arm, and you have to be very present in that moment. And that nearly like feeds your good positive endorphins while you're actually training, and you leave.
Yeah, but see, when most people hear those sentences, all they're going to hear is somebody's getting choked or you're trying to break somebody's arms. Where actually the point of your sentence there is that, like, it's like a type of meditation. You can't think of anything else in your life at that point in time apart from that moment. And, like, you know, like what they sort of say about one mind or no mind. Like, and that's how you're actually able to clear and cleanse your mind, like, in terms of meditation. And that's what it is for us. You know, I suppose, like, if you want to put it bluntly, when somebody's trying to break or kill you, like, you know, you're very much present in the
fight or flight. Yeah.
But it is not, you know, like, that's, people will jump on that straight away and go, oh, this is terrible. Where it's not, like, as you know, like, if I have a tough weekend, like, I'm mad to see you on a Monday if I don't have work early in the morning.
Yeah, well, that was
a Shark Tank.
That was a running joke between me and Callum in the gym maybe 2 or 3 years ago, that where there was a couple of very close matches on a Saturday or a Sunday, and there's a scene from The Simpsons where Mr. Burns buys an American football team, and he says, lads, there's a young fella in the hospital who wants you to win today's game. I know. I know, because I put him there myself. And it cuts to Milhouse in a bed saying, I hope they win or Mr. Burns is coming back. So we adopted that into, if anyone got a text off you on a Sunday afternoon after a bad match, it was like, who's going to be the person to step up and come and take the beating?
Yeah, but listen, again, it's just, like, I suppose it's trying to sort of take the weight off your shoulders. But, like, there's not too many sports like that. And again, this whole sort of, how do you put it, like, trying to explain or articulate, like, why you, like, find, like, solace in something like that, like, is difficult to explain. But it is what it is, and I enjoy it, and I get great, like, fun out of it. This is not just about, again, what people sort of perceive the sport to be. Like, there's more laughing on the mats than there is anything else. Like, yeah. And, you know, even when you're, like, rolling with somebody good, like, and getting caught, like, and people watching, and it's a great community. There's no point in sort of saying anything else. And it's great for me to be able to step out of one into another.
Not to make you sound violent, and I don't mean to drop you in it fully, but maybe you had alluded to before to us a couple of years ago that just because of your age, it kind of maybe frustrated you that athletically you weren't able to compete to test yourself as much as you would have liked to in terms of jiu-jitsu. I know you did tournaments at maybe white and blue belt, and then you competed again at brown belt in Newry.
Yeah.
But even though you won fairly convincingly, I don't think it satisfied your desire for competition, if that makes sense.
Like, I can't train the way I would like to, because, like, you know, between work and football, like, you know, you can't. But, you know, this is the whole idea of, like, trying to be perfect, like, when you're just looking for progress, and sometimes you just have to jump in. But, like, maybe that's the sort of ego, like, that you want to be fully prepared for a competition. Like, that's just the way I've always been. And when you're not fully prepared, that you're just sort of half prepared, you don't want to sort of compete. So, yeah, there is that aspect of it. Like, in between, like, you know, in Gaelic, like, I've no cruciate in either knees. If my ankle has been done, like, both shoulders have been now reconstructed, like, from AC joint dislocations in football. Not to count all of the other pops, bangs, tears, pulls, and strains that I've got, like, and you know, it's, you know, nearly all from Gaelic, not jiu-jitsu. But I can't push myself. But that's, listen, things come with age. I was chatting about this to somebody else the other day. Like, although you lose many things as you get older, you also gain many things as well. You know, like, it's different parts of your life, and you're able to, I wouldn't say philosophize or intellectualize a sport, but you get to understand, like, the greater impact it has. But when you're young, it's just, hey, let's jump in here and have a bit of fun. Like.
And you can just, like, maybe in a strange situation, had you have found all of these things and had the sport have been as evolved just after you'd won the All-Ireland, would you have considered trying to compete in it, or would you have kept dual in both?
I probably would have kept dual in both. But, like, I think, like, really to compete at a sport, you need to be starting it, like, much younger. And like, maybe if I had got it, like, when I was 15 or 16, you know, I find jiu-jitsu more fascinating than MMA. But yeah, I would like to think I could give it a go. But, you know, I wouldn't swap where I've been. Like, I've loved Gaelic football
the whole way, like, yeah.
Like, it's a huge part of my life, and it's taught me many things too, and it brought me to jiu-jitsu as well. So it's not that I would have liked to seen
what it was like to be legally locked in a cage with somebody once in your life,
or not even, like, but even to see how far I could have pushed myself in jiu-jitsu, how good you could have get if you got, like, a younger, like, you know, you mentioned, like, Oskins earlier on in the art of learning, like I'm fascinated by that, like, because what people see as skill and what people see as effective and all of that sort of stuff, like, you know, fascinates me too. And, like, what, you know, like, Gaelic's probably going to be going through a transition period now, like, going forward, like, that, like, you know, we can't measure our players. We only measure, like, if you can score, if you can pass the semi-final, like, that's how we measure all our players. Like, you know, that's the two things that we measure. Like, nobody knows, like, you know, how many tackles you made, like, what's your distribution, like, you know, what's your spatial awareness like.
Do you that internally?
We're starting to look at it, and, you know, definitely sort of looking at what makes an effective player or not, because the reality is most people out there, like, you know, don't. And as a sport, we don't measure, we don't understand, like, the roles different players play and how to measure it properly. As I say, like, even, you know, I'm sure I'll get loads of kickback about this here, but the reality is like, most people are graded on whether they can score or they get past the semi-final stage.
Is that based, I know you're probably basing it off a couple of reasons, but one of the things that always stuck out from me for you was that after a narrow loss or after something like that, a final or whatever over the last few years, you would often say, like, it's high level sport and there's margins and somebody has to lose.
Yes.
Sometimes the coin toss has to go against you, which may have taken away from the fact that you had performed incredibly well up until a certain point and people only look at that last bit that decides the result.
Yeah, but I don't even know if they look at just the result. Like, there's a narrative then that suits and, like, sells as well. Like, you know, there's a game, like, in terms of the media thing, like, which, again, with football, we're pretty poor at, because, like, we just love giving out a bit of, but then, like, we also know that we're hardwired to, like, spot danger and negative things, and it's, I think it's eight or nine more times likely to sell for bad news than good news. So, like, all of that sort of comes into it. But I just, like, if you're in a business and, like, the business is making £10 million a year and you're the best business in Ireland, like, and you're in another business and you make £9.5 million, like, and you're second, you're pretty happy.
You'd be happy with nine and a half million.
Pretty happy. Yeah. But if you see like whether it's like Jim McGuinness's face after the Ulster final and my face after the Ulster final, even though like it's a fairly tight affair, like and like only a penny in the difference on myself and Joyce, like you're after all Ireland final where there's only a point, like and if you go right through the game, like it's basically even Stevens the whole way, like you know, we're Galway's a good example of that, like where we've had maybe six or seven games and there's only ever been a point in it. But like the whole narrative, like you go back to the quarterfinal a couple of years ago and they win, like about like how good like Galway and everything is, and then you go to the narrative this year about how good everything we do is, and the reality is much much different. You know, like it's quite similar, but sport is a zero sum affair. It's like a computer program. It's nots and zeros, and like
yeah,
there is no like, well, that was a half, that was three quarters, that was 90%, Kieran, well done. Like you don't get that, and you have to accept it. But then, like in terms of trying to improve it, you have to look at it through a different narrative. Like in terms of how you're going to try and bring that extra 1%. Like when you get into sport, you understand that. Like you can't cry about it. You know, we talked about the video. What do you call it? The film director, Gary Rich, and he talks about like, you know, you can't hate the game if you're in the game.
Yeah.
And that's the game that we're in. Like it's sport, like whether you like it or not, when you win you're going to get the credit, and when you lose, even if it's gnarly and you're just as good as your opponent, but it's only a very slight difference, it's not business, you'll not be getting the credit for being the second best, you'll just get the credit if you win.
I think the dynamic of how the world is now compared to maybe 20 years ago, 25 years ago when you were playing, is that everything is so readily available on the internet now. And I think that there's both a positive and a negative to that sense. But sometimes I did see a thing, and what would a podcast be without saying a stat on the air that you aren't able to fact check whether it's true or not? But something that 5% of all tweets, or 95% of all tweets at the time, were made up by 5% of users.
Yeah.
Which means that just because you're consuming something doesn't mean that it's the overall majority held opinion. And I think maybe with GA in particular, even though I don't consume a lot of, I do consume a lot of the podcasts and the content, it seems like the ex-players who have transitioned in, they have a bit more skin in the game because they understand the dynamic of winning or losing. And I know it's something that we've talked about before. You're a big fan of the Theodore Roosevelt, it's not the critic that counts thing. As someone who had transitioned from asking questions to MMA fighters for years when I was younger to being the one competing all the time, I kind of look back on that era thinking like those who can't do talk about it and say about it, and that's nearly their sort of end. I know that's completely ironic for me to be saying that sort of stuff considering what I'm doing now as well, but I think you get more empathy from people who understand what it is to lose at a high level.
Yeah, but
or to win at a high level.
There's
you also have enemies as well.
Yeah. How long have we got for this?
I have a huge parchment.
The Golden Cleric Awards, you know, with Father Ted comes to mind. Like I think I'm a big black book. But there's always something different. There's always a different narrative under this sort of situation. So if you take like sort of say like jiu-jitsu MMA, whereas there's a huge negative sort of connotations around the whole fighting game and stuff like that, whether rightly or wrongly people sort of say that, but there is. So people normally who are in it are trying to build it up. Well, gee, I think it's the complete opposite. Everybody like who starts to go into the media, just I've never seen a sport like GAA football like for a negative narrative. Everything's terrible, even though there might be 20 games at the weekend. Like I seen one of the club coaches there recently sort of saying like that he knows people who just say that I'm waiting for that one bad game, like and to tweet about it and to talk about it. And I don't do social media for a reason, even though the boys slag me, because like normally I hear most things back. They all think of these fake accounts or something.
You have multiple burners. I know you have multiple burners.
I love the idea of that, but like even to be honest, like people who know me would go like, well, if Kieran was on it and somebody was tweeting anywhere, he'd just be straight back onto him, which I would be. So that's why I don't do it, because most of it's nonsense, you know, said by people who don't know. But I've noticed over the last couple of years, like just talking to people away from it, you know, and especially people who've been involved in media, a lot of the time they go, like, oh, I hope you didn't take what I said too personally. And, you know, and like, I didn't mean it, but you know yourself, Kieran, like, you know, like when you're on TV, you have to be controversial. Like, I think they're going,
I don't know, sorry.
Sorry.
I've been involved in the sport for 34 seasons in a row.
I don't understand this. You have to be controversial. Like, you know, if there's 85 good things happen in a game and like five bad things, like surely, like, you know, we can concentrate on the good things. And so there's so much like involved in that. Like, I just can't understand the whole idea of like selling yourself, like just to be like that sort of popular thing. Like, but listen, it's the world we live in and you have to accept that. And as I say, it's a game within a game, and these people have a job to do in terms of trying to sell their program, not the sport. And like understanding the difference of that there is too. Like, but then everybody comes back and goes, oh, like I said this good thing, I said that bad thing. I'm just going, well, like, you know, most of the time it's, you know, having a pop at somebody.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, having a pop at people like that, like you might have played against, or, you know, this is your turn to get back, or people complaining about games, like even seen after an All-Ireland final, like, you know, people having a pop about the game, even though I thought it was a very good game, and, you know, trying to settle old scores, or just because maybe they didn't get to that point or do what those players did. Like, you know, so all of that stuff doesn't sit well with me, but listen, it's just part of the game, and I suppose you have to accept it.
That's a discussion I think that you elaborated on in the week leading up to the final, that people maybe say, who had played in a certain era, would say the quality of the game now is gone compared to then, but like athletic wise or sports science wise or athlete wise or overall skill wise, it's completely different now than it was 20 years ago.
But I feel like
people have revisionist history romanticizing of the better days.
It's like, but the thing for me is there's YouTube there.
Yeah.
Like, we have something, like, you just have to sit down and sit and watch, but nobody wants to do that. Like, this up and down game that people say was better, and then they sort of say it's a better contest. And like, there's things in our game that definitely need tweaking. Like, our tackle's the biggest thing, it's the thing that happens most often, and yet we just completely ignore it. But we create rules then, even for rules that are already there. You know, like, you know, like, and like, you know, people have the best intentions and like on trying to make the game better, but like there's also like a part to play in sort of saying like you know, it's not as bad as what people think. And like, you know, and again, like I know people come back to me and this is with this thing, and I said, just it's simple, watch the TV, watch the games from 10, 15, 20 years ago, 30 years or 40 years ago, and compare it to now. Our worst game is what I call it, like 10 times better than those games. And I'll sit with anybody and
argue that point.
I don't even have to argue, just to watch it.
You made a correlation about how jiu-jitsu people try and amplify the sport. Maybe GA people don't try and amplify the sport.
Sorry, GA football people. Hurling people are unbelievable at amplifying the sport. GA football people.
I did find that the hurling broadcasts around the All-Ireland and stuff like that, especially the way like, maybe it was the novelty of it being on the BBC and then all the English people watching for the first time thinking, what is this insane sport?
And here's the thing is, like, I admire them for it. I love the passion they have for their own sport. I'm not knocking them. Like, you know, like, I've, you know, a lot of friends, even though we don't grow up in, like, in a sort of hurling-based county, like, they're so passionate about their sport. Like, and,
you know, it's probably one of the most skillful sports on the planet,
football,
if you think.
Yes.
I for whatever, the coordination and...
I think the same about football, and people will argue me about hurling, and they'll be argue about rugby, and everybody has their own sport.
Need to argue about rugby.
I know, but like, I love football, and I love it a lot, and I'm not going to make any apologies for it. And like, I love being involved, and I love the game itself. You know, I see much more good things in it than bad things, and like, I want to see it do well. So I'm up there giving out about it the whole time, like, and telling everybody, you're not as good as me because I won this and I was brilliant and I was class, and you're all terrible because did you see me play?
Yeah.
This is all about me. This is not about you.
So how could somebody fix that? Let's not just say the individual is on the telly. How could the GAA as a collective, or maybe counties as a collective, help to build themselves up a little bit more? My one shout here that I just think, like, I think I may have mentioned it in passing in a changing room 2.5 years ago. Had yous have had a Netflix type thing, like a fly in the wall thing? Like, you can say that about any team that wins something and then say, oh, well, if you had been following
that,
for
2 seconds, and I'll be honest, that's my weakness. Like, you know, like people tell you, like, you know, this is the first person I've talked to since the All-Ireland final.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, you're fairly elusive.
It's not even that elusive.
No,
Like, it's well, I tend to get myself into trouble when I open my mouth. Maybe that's it. But the documentary, and there is, and you know, media would like struggle, like, you know, about getting that, and I understand it because, like, again, this is the balance of what the sport is, and then, like, you know what the star thing of, like, sort of keeping things internal, like, and maybe that's just an Armagh thing, like, but you know,
Oh, it's a death. There would have to be like in an ideal world, the camera crews and whatever would have to be like from different countries who don't care about the sport, who are literally under NDAs. And that's the sort of stuff that does happen around these documentaries when there's so much money involved. The Drive to Survive thing has given the biggest boost that Formula One could have ever imagined in its life. The sprint thing about the runners in America that follows different college athletes. The tennis one.
I just get the feeling you're trying to tell me to be more friendly to the media here.
No, not at all. I think it's hilarious that there's going to be people that have not heard from me in years and are going to be sitting at home thinking, how the fuck did this come about? I just mean that in terms of growing the sport, like something on Netflix now, like, and it doesn't even have to be about Armagh, something on Netflix or those sort of behind fly in the wall series, the one about Manchester City, the one about Arsenal, like those things kind of show a different perspective of everything. And I think it would help boost everything.
But I think one of the things we have to do is to stop restricting our players from becoming stars, both hurling and football. Like there is with our the amateurs, the thing is this whole this thing. If that happens, like obviously then like when you go into that type of publicity or media thing and players become stronger and the sport becomes stronger, there's always that sort of balance in there. But like it's a huge part of our sport too, like the whole fact that people work and then play too. But again, we're not unique in that fact. You know, in terms of
like other people do that as well.
Yeah, like, you know, like loads of people who participate in sport, like, you know, work, and especially at a level, like, but, and we want to be an elite level sport, but yet, like, you know, training then, like, and, you know, like, I know yourself, like, you've laughed at me before, like, when you talk, people talk about having, like, you know, like off seasons, like, and your question is, how do you get better at a sport, like, when you don't practice it, like, on a daily or weekly basis? Like, and, you know, it's a valid question. So, you have all of those things sort of coming into it, like, and how to raise it. Like, I think there's a lot of easy wins in terms of what we do, but it's a small country too. And, like, you know, in terms of TV and coverage, but social media, like, is a great opportunity as well as the negative force it has been. Like, today, it has got a great, like, potential to be very positive about the sport, like the 10 best plays at the weekend, you know, some of the stuff.
Yeah,
like,
I remember
you. Like, to me, that'd be good. I'd love to see all our kids seeing those, you know, catches and passes and, you know, things like that there. So, like, there's definitely potential around everything, as well as the negative things. So, like, there is loads we can do. And I've just got a feeling somebody going, oh, Kieran, you said you could, like, you know, be more, like, we're trying to open it up. We're trying to let people
Since
know.
You said that thing, like, here, yeah, do this
do
for
this,
us.
Do that, like, so.
But I do, like, weirdly enough, there is a journalist that I followed for years who had worked for the BBC, and she had done a lot of stuff specifically around TikTok, trying to pitch the BBC for a long time that you need to start using these avenues because this is how people, younger generations are consuming. They don't have ways to get news. They don't have ways to get information. Like, I know yous have done quite a bit and I've seen other clubs doing it. Like, having that in-house person, content creator for social media stuff goes a long way in terms of just even visibility and getting stuff out.
Business and stuff like that. Like, you know, myself and my wife was like a physiotherapy clinic. Like, and like, we're terrible at like social media, like, and trying to get things out there. And it's funny, like, you know, even with my son Kane, like, and like I see with the young fellas, like, the phone's never out of their hand, and even with the WhatsApp, you know, with the two ticks and stuff, like, it's, oh, I didn't see your message. The phone is
turn it off. Turn
to
it
your
off.
Hand, so it is.
Turn off the red receipts. Read, know, receipts.
Like, everybody does that, as if, like, but my point is like, you know, when you're getting something out here, like, phones are glued to people that generation's hand.
Yeah.
Like, the chance of them not seeing their phone or not having their phone in their hand.
I didn't see it.
You know, it's glued to you, like, so, like, you know, I laugh at the players, like, you know, sometimes, oh, I didn't get that message, going, yeah, right.
Training at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning.
You see them walking around the, what do you call it, street, like, and it's, you know, it's constantly sort of looking at it. So, yeah, there is huge opportunities there. And again, it's beyond my sort of pay grade or understanding, because, like, the whole idea of social media, but, like, it is huge. And like it doesn't have to be that expensive, you know, TV sort of things to raise the profile of our sport, like, and the good things about it. So
you had said to me before, one of the main things if you're ever working with an athlete or meeting someone or they're asking for advice is to show them you're weak. Can you explain for people who don't understand that how important that is? Because you touched on it a second ago when we were talking about me being like, how can there be an off season if you're trying to become the best in the country? Like, we
Well, you can't say that you want something.
Let's not use me just in that example. Another jiu-jitsu athlete, for example, who trains twice a day, 5 to 6 days a week, who does weights on top of it all. I'd argue that that load is quite higher than a lot of people would suspect compared to, say, other sports.
Yeah, look, and there's so many different levels of... like, when you want something... You know, we have this huge issue in the GA about controlling it, like, and about pre-season and training and all that there. Like, but it's choice. If you don't want to train...
You don't have to.
You don't have to. So, like, you know, there's always the Mr. Bad Wolf, like, you know, with the GA manager. Like, it's the same as Seb or John. Like, you know, if you don't want to train...
They're not making you.
No, they're not making you. Like,
yeah.
They're asking you to see your potential. They'll tell you what it takes to make because they understand. But, like, this whole idea of that, like, you know, like, we're all just going to train the same and it's all going to be nice. Like, so the whole idea of, like... I wouldn't say, like, and I don't want to knock any political values, but any, like, a sort of communist type of, you know, we all do the same and just see who's the best. Like, but that's not a competitive arena. Like, if you know, you train twice a week and you're beating me, I might try to train 3 times. Can I get more skillful? Can I get, like, better? Can I get stronger? So it's all of that. And it's not a race to the bottom. It's the same as business. It's the same as relationships. It's the same as family. The more you put into something, the more you're going to get out of it. And you have to understand that particular even mindset. You know, and it's not about, like, it's about understanding the sport, because you can overtrain, you can, what I call it, like, you can go into red, there's no doubt about that. But even in our own sport, like, compared to what it used to be, like, which was, like, you know, almost, like, you know, I wouldn't say, like, abuse, but it was silly, like, the type of training that we did. Like, now I think it's a pleasure to train in Gaelic football. Like, it's nearly all football, it's all skill orientated. Like, outside of pre-season, like, it's just games. And it's something that I love about jiu-jitsu, like, that you learn, but you're competing, like,
every class
is, you're actually doing the sport, like, you know, like, but those days, like in saying Gaelic football, like, the whole idea of running around fields, like, I used to hate coming up the road from Dublin, like, to run around a field, like, you know, just run around. Like, and those days are gone. But, like, to hear the narrative out there, you'd swear it wasn't, like, that these people are being, like, flogged within an inch of their lives, and it's a terrible regime. Of course, you know, like, when you're in other sports like jiu-jitsu, like, you know, your fella's going into work, like, but have done 2 hours in the mats beforehand and come back, like, and their families, but they just want to compete and push themselves and get to a level. Like, and, you know, jiu-jitsu is fairly... you know, severe on the body as well. So in terms of showing me you're weak, like, just don't say you want something that really badly when you're not willing to give something, like, for that. And that sort of irritates me. You know, people who said, oh, I really want this. But I'm busy next week. Like, I need 3 months off and I need 2 months off. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, we all need breaks. We all need holidays. Like, we all need sort of time. But that's your choice. Some people, like, it's a bit like work-life balance. Like, what work-life balance for one person is not the same as another.
Somebody else.
And so priority, for some people, the priority is, like, home life and family and time with their kids. And that's good. Like, and that has to be a major part of your life. For other people, like, their business is, like, you know, number one, and, you know, at different times. And it's not all about quantity, it's about quality too. Like, there's so many different facets to that particular thing. But just don't tell me, like, you want something, like, and... but I don't want to get in shape for it. Like, you know, because I'm really skillful. Like, this whole idea of, like, you know, these boys running up and down the pitch, you know, like, I don't like that. Like, Just leave me here
in
the one spot. Like, let's change the rules so I don't have to run up and down the pitch. So I just...
It's a great stroke. I think people are joking about that at the minute. I think it is quite funny. But they've got, like, from that perspective of, like, the show me your weak sort of ideology, like... And I was going to bring him up later on anyway, but someone like Stephen Sheridan, who was, I think, the player of the year for U's in like 2017 or something like that. His body has been through the ringer over however many years, but his commitment from my talking to him or from whatever about him was always bang on, good at other sports, dual sports, whatever. And he gave it all for so long and then had to step away, and you've brought him in then onto the backroom stuff, and then people win All-Ireland medals. And I actually felt like nearly very heartbroken for him in that sense, that like he had been through the trenches for that long and then not through his mind, maybe more through his body's.
Yeah, but it's not just like with Stephen, like he's a unique individual himself, and Rory Grogan and Aidan Falkland, but very instrumental. Like,
sorry, the only reason why I brought Stephen up is he texted me yesterday saying, I'm sorry I haven't been at training the last while. I've just had stuff on with work and whatever. And I was like, jiu-jitsu will always be there for you, but it is kind of cool the way that some people nearly feel guilty when they're missing it, when life gets in the way.
He's a unique individual, like, and you do, like, because he soldiered with Armagh through the bad times, and like, to miss out on that, like, you know, it was hard on him, but he was still part of it, which was great. But like, when Stephen was trying to get other people to give what he gave, and not all of them were during those years, and he was trying to explain, like, and if they did, there would probably be success earlier. But unfortunately, we're all on a journey when it comes to sport or life, and like, we're learning, like, you know, and when you look back, you can see sometimes, like, that, like, what you thought you were given was not a lot. And you know, but again, because of his own personality, Stephen doesn't hold that resentment for other players or people. He accepts that, like, and he just wanted to see them win. And yeah, even though he won't get the same glory out of it, but, like, in my eyes, and, like, and I know everybody who's involved in the team, like, we wouldn't be in those positions, and only four people like Stephen. But you do try to, like, get them to understand, like, that there is life outside sport. And, like, again, going back to the thing, like, at different times in your sport and life, there will be a different priority on sport and a different priority on other things. And then, like, as you get older, that's what I'm sort of saying, those things change. Like, you know, as I say, in my own life, when I quit, Cian was born, and I learned what it was like to love somebody apart from maybe myself, you know, in terms of the sport. Like, and, you know, he was instrumental, like, in how I changed and my perspective on things. And still is, like, he's a constant source of, I would just sort of say, feedback, like, when I look at something's wrong. So it's unique that, like, a 15, 16-year-old can give you lessons in life. Like, you know, yeah.
Well, people are saying that Trump got elected by his son advising him what podcasts to do and different stuff like that to connect with a younger audience.
If you're comparing me to Trump now,
quite. No. I'm just using the younger influence there. But
yeah, so it is, like, that sort of balance and, like, understanding, like, of what it is at different times is important. Like, so, like, when you're trying to do things, that doesn't mean I always do them well. No, like, I definitely don't, but I do try. But I try and keep all of us accountable to each other, you know, like, as the players get older, they get, like, they understand, like, the whole, like, setup better, and they have more input into that. Like, no different than we do in the gym with Seb. You know, like, you know, again, like, Seb's humility allows people, like, he listens to everybody in the gym, like, and feedback and what's happening and what's, you know, like, what the feeling is like in there. And, like, that's always important to always sort of, like, you know, make sure you're open to that.
But that's another thing, like, there's maybe I'm coming at this from a slightly different perspective, because we would chat and a lot of it would go over my head, but then I look at it at the wider scale of the sport and how people talk. You do put a lot of not pressure, but you do give a lot of delegation maybe to some of your backroom staff in terms of, look, you're in charge of this, you're in charge of this, and you'll meet consistently, so it's not my way or the highway. No. Like, you are very much
I'm not the person most people perceive me to be. I'm quite opinionated, like, I'm not going to deny that, and one might say argumentative at times or at all times.
Yeah.
You know, and I tell everybody to come in, they need to know their stuff, because, you know, if I have something, you have to come back at me. I call myself a bit of a 24-hour person. Sometimes I'll defend, like, a thing, like, beyond what I should, but I will always take it away and come back with stuff. But I have really strong people in good positions, Julian S and C, like, more on the medical staff, but, like, Donaghy, Kieran McKeever, Connors Gilligan, like, Kieran McKinney, Dennis Hollywood, like, I've a lot of good people around me. And even within the county board, like, I've had strong people there, like, great sponsors, and I'm always trying to look for people that actually want you to win.
Yeah,
that's important. And I know people think, well, that's a given, but it's not. There's a lot of people maybe want them to be involved with winners, but they don't necessarily want, like,
at you getting the win.
So there's a whole lot of that goes on, and so surround yourself with good people and strong people, because, like, you know, you don't, like, I'm big into psychology, but, like, you know, I have somebody else who does that. Like, I like fitness and strength, and I'm big into that, but if somebody who knows more than me than that there, you know, you have defence and, like, an attack, and, like, and everybody probably knows more than me in that particular thing, but I try and make myself as knowledgeable as possible in most things, so I can at least have that argument that people like to think that I love. So, but I have good people, and I think it's so important.
There was a quote that you'd mentioned before, that 1 month after somebody had started working with you before, they said, everything I was told about you was a lie. Because maybe they got to see how you were operating and how you were actually working on a day by day and one to one basis with a lot of these people.
Yeah, like listen, and again, I am far from perfect. And it was funny, I was at a thing last night and like thank somebody for support. And he says, well, they always criticize you too, Ciarán. And I said, listen, I don't mind criticism when the reason behind it is to see you succeed. But like, I always have a problem with criticism is there because they want you to fail. And again, like Armagh has been very lucky in that regard, you know, in terms of like, you know, most of our supporters, like 98% of them are great, but you always have the 1% who make the most noise. And like I found again, like, you know, those people like are, they tend to just be poisonous no matter where they go.
Yeah.
Like it's not just with football, like it's just like in the work, even though they might be successful at it or whatever. Like, but
it's stereotypical to suggest that if you had a load of apples and you genuinely put a rotten one in the middle of it,
that's what happens.
It's going to be infected.
And sometimes like people like that can be involved in success, but there's always something like sort of rotten about it. Like, but listen, you know, I'm not here to knock anybody that can't defend themselves.
I have a couple of just specifics that I want to give you before I let you go, because a few people in particular had asked a couple of different questions. Now, this came from someone that we both know, but I'm not going to tell you who it was. Has winning something that you've desperately craved by default, has winning something you've desperately craved by default actually led to more of the stuff that you resent, i.e. constant attention, official obligations, whether it be media or other? And how do you distinguish between people who mean well and deserve you and your players' time and those who are just trying to capitalise on some sort of success, especially after so much negativity that had been loaded onto us over the last year?
It's funny, I don't think I crave...
That may be a loaded question as well.
No, I don't think I crave success as managers the way some people think. I definitely have craved success for the players because I know what it meant to me. And like people could, and that's not me being altruistic, but I do understand what I do and the impact that I have, and I still do not cross that white line. And I did not make Joe McElroy make that block or Ben Creeley or Rian O'Neill hit those points. That's them. That's their ability and desire and want to win. The same way as when I played Joe or Brian or Paul Grimley, like didn't make me block that ball. It's still about the people who cross the white line. And you know, so like people like sort of like would feel like that, you know, like he hasn't won anything. And I did win plenty when I would play it. Like, you know, like relatively speaking for the county that I came from. So, you know, like doing it as manager is great and the stuff that comes with it, but it genuinely wasn't me, it was them. You facilitate like a pathway for them to sort of like understand that like they have the potential to do this, but it's still about them. In terms of the default, like it can be frustrating, there's no doubt about that. Like I've done very little in terms of things like this here, because again, like I don't want to colour or take away from any of the players' things. And again, that's not me being, you know, like really nice or whatever about it. Like I do struggle with some of the stuff because like everything that you take, like, well, like there's a different angle on it. Like, you know, we take this here, people will take something out of it and like they'll find something negative in it, like, you know, to use with something else or something that has happened somewhere else. Like, so like you just have to accept that. But like the point that you made to me about the whole documentary, like I can't want a lot from a sport and not help.
That's how, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so I do understand the game that I'm in. And you know, even people would have sort of said, like I remember saying last year, oh, he didn't go out like and talk to the press and like that went against him. And I was going, no, it didn't. Like, it's just like, you know, it's another narrative now. Like, and but I always went out and talked to the press when things were going against me because that's my job. But
you would always talk to the press when you lose. And sometimes it would be a coach that would go out when you win.
When, yeah. And like, but that's because they had a big part to play in the winning. Like, and my job is to take a lot of the stuff and I don't mind that. And like, you know, people are sort of saying, oh, he's become more friendly and stuff like this. But you know me, I'm always friendly.
No, that's probably one of the things that, and I don't mean to say bothered me, do you know what I mean about it? But it's kind of like, I've seen you be incredibly late for meetings and other things because a random, and I'm not saying a random, but a white belt is asking you a question after a class. And they how giving you are with your time from a jiu-jitsu sense. And I know it's probably the exact same with football. There's lads in Dundalk who have trained with us who did play football, are now different jobs and whatever. And this one fellow would regularly bring you up because a couple of the lunchtime classes you've been in. And he said, I left feeling a foot taller. And it was just about like how, like what he had said. Do you know what I mean? In terms of like his life or you know, I'm not going to reveal his profession or what it is that you'd said to him, but one small thing can have such a knock-on effect. And I think you give that to people quite regularly. And I think it bothered a lot of us who would have trained with you or known you from that perspective of maybe what the perceived perception was of you as a person.
Yeah, and it can work in both ways. You can say the wrong thing at the wrong time. Or
you need to quit.
But, you know, like it's... but I've been lucky in my own sort of football life and the people that I've been involved with, even like, you know, like in business and stuff too, like in terms of getting that sort of, you know, helping hand and, you know, like mentorship and... You know, like it's been so. I've been very lucky in that regard. Like, you do try to give things back in that. But I love coaching. Like, the best part, like I say, it's the most toxic job in the planet, and I'm telling you that with hand and heart.
Coaching,
for GA coaching, coaching. It is so the amount of stuff that you have to put up with. People have no idea. However, I love being involved with the GAA coaching part of it. I love, like, you know, being on the pitch with the boys. That's my favourite part. Like, it's, believe me, it can be a very small part of it nowadays, but I just love that part. Like, and seeing fellas, like, you know, trying to excel at what they do, and the same with trying to sort of help them and different things off the pitch. You just love to see them succeed. And to me, the more we do that with our players, the more successful the GAA will be. Like, and I think that there's, you know, you know, like helping people have a good, what do you call it, experience, like within the squad, like, is important, because then they'll give back. But I love coaching. I do. It's something that I really enjoy.
But I think you're after hitting on a really good thing that came up a lot there, how you were able to maintain the depth of your panel, maybe to keep people with blinkers on, to focus on the end goal, and not to listen to the stuff that I've heard you say in interviews and stuff like that about you should be playing, you should be whatever. Like, that is a testament to the culture that you have created. It's a testament to the culture that you had created at Kildare, where the players were raging when you were gone. So, do you know what that is? Is it a secret formula?
No, well, look, it's again dependent on what you want. Like, there is a meritocracy in sport. And again, it comes down to opinion. So the players that we pick may not always be the best players. But again, this is going back to what we talked about, like, in terms of understanding what a player is. Like, you know, somebody sort of saying, well, he's a better player than that guy in the panel. And he goes, yeah, but he actually is more of a scorer and your man's more of a man marker. Yeah, but he's a better footballer. And he goes, but he's going to be, that fella's doing a different role. And so even understanding that, and again, the role that you might play in that particular panel, like, and what you can do and how you can, like, add to what we do. Like, people outside it will not see what happens in that, like whether Daniel McGee or, like, you know, like a Conor McGuinness, like, what, because they didn't make, like, the match day 26 or 30, like, you know, on what they add, but they do add to it, like, and they add to it a lot, you know, and it's trying to get them to see that, like, and not everything in life is going to give you glory. Not everything in life people will sort of see, but they say the measure of a man or a woman is what they do when nobody is watching.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get that. Like, it's the same with your kids. It's the same with your relationships. Like, not everybody's going to see the good stuff. Like,
to even see how someone's celebrating you doing well.
Yeah, but even, like, just... Like, I'm big on 1% just because they add up. And, like, and again, like, it sounds so cliche, and it's not, but, like, every decision you make creates way that you think, and then when you have to think, like, off the cuff, like, that neural pathway that has been, like, created over many years of, like, those small decisions allows you to make big decisions better. And, like, for me, that's sort of key. Like, you know, so, you know, like, I'd asked John Cavanagh one day what was it that makes people, like, good at what, you know, to do, like what makes people good at jiu-jitsu or MMA. And he thought about it, and he just sort of said, like, listen, Kieran, probably the ability to turn up every day. But you say that to somebody, but people want a narrative about this, like, he was born with. And I'm not going to get into the nature versus nurture thing, because there is this, like, God-given or physiological sort of aspects to being brilliant at something, but there's also, like, desire work. You've never heard anybody at world-class level say, oh, like, it just came naturally to me. I didn't have to work. I didn't have to train every day. I didn't have to do it.
Or that they weren't demented in how they approached
it. Like, you know, and as you know, like that inner voice talks to every sport person, no matter how good they are. But it's getting people to understand, don't use the excuse, oh, well, I'm not good enough, to stop trying at something. Like, that's the one thing we all go, like, you know, like, and it's a dirty little secret every top athlete is, they fail at most things every day, but they get up the next morning and they go again. Do not use it as an excuse not to start again. Like, you know yourself, you walk into jiu-jitsu, like, you know, you have your black belt on, next thing some blue belt catches you with an arm bar and you leave, what do you call it, you know, but it's a lesson in humility.
Never happened to me.
It's a lesson in, like, an understanding that, but you don't go at all, I'm not going back there.
No. Back, you know, you get
beat, like, you know, you get beat in a competition, you get caught, like, in something that you don't like, and the next thing, but you know, you have to get back at it, and that's life. Like life throws us curveballs, life throws us a lot of stuff that's very difficult to deal with. And if our go-to thing is as well, oh, I'm not built for this, or I'm not good enough to do this here, like, you know, like, life is gonna be much more difficult.
That's the, I didn't want to bring it up earlier on because it was out of context, but you've just alluded to it there. The thing that stands out to a lot of us is that maybe if we were competing and stuff like that, we might get a text saying, how did it go? Send us the clip. You'll watch it. Good luck today, whatever. And then you'll say, generally, it's like, did you learn something from it? If yes, great, back training, we'll fix it. But it's very hard. It's very easy sometimes to give advice. And then can it be hard to live by the same advice when you've been on the end of a short result?
Yeah, like, listen, but I look at it, everything. It's like, so with, like, your relationship, like, you know, you're going to have arguments, you're going to have fallouts. And, like, you know, if you just jump to things right, then, you know, like, well, we didn't get on today, so we're not going to get on for the rest of our lives. Like, like, you have to get back, you have to work at it. Like, sometimes you have to apologize because you were an ass. You know, like, all of these things, same with our kids, same with, like, you know, our friendships. Like, not everything runs well. Like, even within sport teams, you're going to be throwing things that, like, you know, could just put the whole thing, like, ass about face. And you just, it's easy to run away and sort of hide. And it's hard, like, you know, it's hard to make the decisions when it's it doesn't suit, you know, like, it's like, and I hear things now, like, about, you know, but like, some of the things that Arma has done is brilliant and all that, but they're hard things.
Yeah.
To turn up every day when everybody's telling you you're losing, that you're chokers, that you're not worthy of this here, that you're no good, you know, like, that there's this happening, that's happening, like, and even though you know it's not, like, and like after 3 or 4 years of existing, and that's what happens in a lot of the smaller counties, that, like, you know, it's hard to keep on at 27 or 28 because you've other things coming into your life, and can you do it? But like Forker did, and Grugan did, and Soupy did, they stuck there, like, when, for 3 or 4 years, and now 32, like, you know, when things were going, like, if they had left, would we have won? No. So they'd listen to everybody and sort of saying, what are you doing there? Like, Armagh's not going to do this. You know, it's like, you know, you can't walk away from something just because it's a challenge. It's difficult enough. I think, you know, there's different reasons, you know, it can be a change in life, or like, it's your just choice, that it's your time or whatever, but don't do it because it's hard, because, like, anything worth getting in life is hard. Do you think we would have had so much joy or outpouring of emotion, like, if we hadn't have put
all the losses
in together?
Yeah.
You know, so, like, it's no different than you can't experience happiness without sadness. You know, you can't experience a lot of things unless you've had the other end of it. Like, so, and, like, this is not me going, like, you know, oh, it's difficult. It is bloody hard to do when everybody's trying to pull you down or knock you back or blame you for every wrongdoing that every player has done or every mistake that has ever happened. Like, you know, even though most of it is outside of your control, it's not an easy thing to keep turning up. But we've been lucky in some of our players that have been able to do that. And, like, it's a testament to them. And I think it'll serve them well in life. Because, as we all know, as you get older, there's more shit that's thrown.
You need to develop a fairly, I know you're going now, sorry, but you need to develop a fairly thick skin. And I just know this from my
rhinoceros' hide would come in.
It'll roll off your back and you'll take it. But I know that, like, same with players, same with whatever, like, they have family members who use the internet. They have family members who see all the stuff as well. And I know what that is like in a personal perspective as well. And it's not great. It can be not great.
No, it's tough on them. Like, my mum and dad, like, you know, for many years, like, I sat in the kitchen, like, and I've watched tears in their eyes asking me to walk away because of the abuse that I would have got. Like, my own sister, like, who has her own battles, like, with her health, like, and who's an unbelievable warrior. You know, and so much admiration for her, but she would be standing up for me, and she's not the sort of person
maybe more than you'd stand up for yourself.
Like she doesn't need any more stress in her life. And my younger brother Declan, who'd still be involved in football and, you know, things like it, and here's all this stuff thrown, like, and, you know, even my own son, and, you know, my wife, my kids, like, it's constantly, like, you know, Leah came home one day and said, somebody in my class is there, daddy said you should quit, daddy, why is that? Like, and I just go, yeah. And, like, why do they think you should quit? And, you know, and, like, they're looking up at you, like, they're wondering why somebody's giving out about their dad. So it is difficult, but listen, I understand where I am. And
the last thing, Because I know you're going to plan on doing a few more of these with people who will grill you more about the final and the lead up and all of that sort of stuff. I was in...
Probably not.
after the reaction of this. I was in France on a family holiday on the weekend of the final. And I felt it was quite important since losing my mum to go to be on that family holiday with my dad and with my sister and stuff like that. And had considered by the text messages of people in the days beforehand saying like, there's a ticket here if you want to fly home and stuff. And I was like, oh, would that be interesting, blah, blah, blah. But from listening to it afterwards, there was two things that I wanted to ask you. And you told me yes to one of them. The dressing room was spotless after you had celebrated, after it was done. Leave no trace type thing, which I think is class. But on the BBC Social podcast, after a few weeks later, I'm lying on a beach after going on a nice cycle, listening to this, Niall Grimley telling the story about the bus coming back down the road and it stopping at the site of where his brother had passed. That was probably one of the most emotive things I had ever heard in my life from him, and the thoughtfulness from you and the panel for doing that. And I think if there was anything to be taken from the point of togetherness and looking out for each other, it was that story.
Yeah, but it's funny, like, that's only part of his story. Like,
he spoke very well. I think, he's a credit to himself and his parents and his family. And
Niall's a very unique individual, like, in terms of who he is, even as a man. Like, he's just such a good person. Like, and but, like, you know, he'd broken his neck before that. He wasn't making the panel, even, you know, like his ability. Like, he just couldn't get that thing to click for him. There was so many things, and even like halfway during the summer, he still wasn't on it. But like, he never stopped. He just never stopped, and like, what their family had to go through, like, you know, I hope no family does, but obviously these things happen. But, you know, like, it's a small thing, to be honest. You know, I know, like, Niall has been very grateful for it and everybody has made a lot of it, but it's a small thing. Like we were in that line, like, you know, those cold nights in November and December last year, like, when the family was going through, like, a terrible time. And it's in those moments, like, when they close the door, and there's empty chairs and there's empty houses, and it's the people who do all of that work to make those empty chairs not feel as empty, or people who deserve far more credit than what we did, like, for that thing. We wanted to acknowledge that, like, but, you know, it's a small thing, like, and what people have done and surrounded his family with love and support and stuff like that there. But, you know, in terms of what we did, like, we just always tried to be there, and like, the mats is a place for me to sort of lose my problems outside. We try to make the pitch, and we try to make the dressing room somewhere that, like, Niall could find some sort of, not solace, but just support and anchorage in his life at a tough time. But
it's similar to what we would say about jiu-jitsu,
yeah,
largely. The last thing that, to just not throw you under the bus a wee bit, but no, I obviously have appreciated the advice and different stuff that I've gotten off you over the years, but when something bad happens and how people react to you or how people look out for you is the kind of thing, like, you'll fight the other person's corner. So Seb, Cormac O'Hanlon, Damien Rooney, Eddie, a lot of people from the gym, but you had changed a flight to make it back in time for my mother's wake to a degree, or you had broken several speed limits coming down the road, and nobody knew that we had known each other, but I had a lot of relatives who were GA mad, and they were just thinking, like, what the fuck is he doing here? But they then understood the martial art connection and the jiu-jitsu connection and that sort of thing. I would say it meant a lot to me, but it also just hammered home, like, how many people from the gym, from the community, from whatever, from jiu-jitsu, who were thinking of you or who came out or who were at the funeral or at my house. And then the opposite side of it, to sound a bit negative, is there's people who you would have been friends with for 20 years and you didn't hear from them. And it's crazy that a sport like jiu-jitsu, like whatever, can bring all of those people together.
Like, you learn in
life.
I'm
sorry for embarrassing you publicly on that, but
you learn in life, like what's important, and you try to support you know, understand, like, I know, like, my own, like, we've had losses in our own family, and, like, you know, Maura lost her father a couple of years ago, and I always, like, remember how people would talk. Andy Fearn lost his father during celebrations, like a physio and this thing, and, like, he mentioned again, like, how you would notice people at wakes and stuff, and you do try your best to be there. But the big thing for me in all of that, like, stuff is you might not always be able to do your best. Like, you know, for so many different reasons, but, and people might not always even see that you've tried your best, but to me that's an important thing to try your best to do right. And again, I'm underlining this here just before people throw stuff at me, I've made loads of mistakes and I do a lot of things that, you know, like, maybe I shouldn't have done, like, or shouldn't have happened, but I do try to always do my best, like, given the circumstances. And in terms of being there, like, for you, like, it's a small thing, like, as I say, like, you've had a lot of Monday mornings where you've had to put up with a lot of stuff for me, so a small thing.
Thankfully I didn't have to experience the day on a Friday morning, which is what it usually is. But enjoy New York. I'm going to Vegas. We'll get training when I come back from all of that. And to the irate people who've been watching this thinking, how did he not ask this, that, or the other? I'm very sorry. He is now open for booking, so you can contact him for multiple media appearances as well.
Thanks. Cheers.